Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
There's fascia right around each muscle cell, the paramecium, the endomecium, and then there's kind of gliding fascia within the muscle. It's like lube, a lube layer within the muscle, and then there's the fiber outside the muscle, the epimysium, which is what we all think of as, you know, we all know the muscles are come in their own saran wrap coating. To go through all that would be in detail would be too much, but all of that stuff together is elastic. And if you train elasticity, like the Kenyan runners who have very long shanks, were able to store and use the elasticity in their tendons like a kangaroo to conserve energy for and win the marathons.
Hello, my name is Pete McCall, and thank you for tuning in to this episode of the All About Fitness podcast. That voice you heard in the beginning is a guest for this episode, Mr. Thomas Myers. Now, in the interest of full disclosure, this is actually a rerun. I'm rerunning this episode. I recorded this interview with Mr. Myers back in 2018, and I wanted to run it because the last couple episodes you've heard, Sue Hitzman, who created the Melt Method, Jerry Driefall, who's an athletic trainer. In both those episodes, you heard my guest refer to Mr. Myers. And so since I had this interview in the can, I wanted to re-release it to have you hear from one of the leaders in understanding fascia and connective tissue. Thomas Myers wrote the book Anatomy Trains. I'm going to have a link down below to the latest edition in the show notes. If you really want to understand anatomy, if you really want to understand movement, pick up a copy of Anatomy Trains. Or I wrote the ebook Dynamic Anatomy based a lot on Thomas Myers' work. So if you want to understand how your body moves, look down below in the show notes and either pick up a copy of Anatomy Trains or pick up the ebook I produced called Dynamic Anatomy, and both will teach you what you need to know about how your body is designed to function. I had a lot of fun listening to this conversation for the first time in a couple years. You're going to hear Thomas and I talk about sailboats. You're going to hear us talk about architecture. And most importantly, you're going to hear us talk about how sailboats and architecture apply to the human body. Here we are, fascinating conversation with one of the worldwide experts in fascia and soft tissue and the author of Anatomy Trains, 4th edition, Mr. Thomas Myers.
I'm Pete McCall, the All About Fitness podcast, and I'm speaking today with author and soft tissue expert Thomas Myers. Thomas, quick question as we get started. I saw one of your videos a number of years ago about a sailboat, and you love sailing. How does a sailboat relate to the human body?
Well, I would relate to that in two ways. When you're training somebody, I do body work much more than training, but it requires all your senses. You're feeling the person, you're seeing the person, you're listening to what they say. You're listening to the sound of their footfalls on the floor, maybe the sound of whatever equipment they're using. All of those things give you a guide to how they are. So one way in which sailing is really important to me is it's training for my senses. You're all the time listening to the boat, feeling the boat, watching how things are going, and that kind of all senses on deck thing is something that connects my work and sailing and makes sailing for me part of my training for my work. But I think the way you were going at the question was that a sailboat is somewhat like a human being in that we have really had the idea that we're more like a building and that we're one brick on top of another brick. So we have the idea of the skeletal frame and that the leg stands on the foot and the thigh stands on the leg and the pelvis fits into the top of the femurs, and that's a framework. and that the muscles are individual actors like the cables of a crane on that stable framework. So the deltoid is going to abduct because it's hanging onto a stable shoulder girdle and pulling on the more movable humerus. But that's really not the way it works. Your skeletal framework, even if you put all the joint tissues on it and all the ligaments on it, it still wouldn't stand up. It would just sag. It depends on the balance of the soft tissues, which is a combination of those tendons and ligaments, but of course the muscles, which are run by the nerves. So that really suggests itself something more like a sailboat, where the mast is light. Like your spine is really quite light. Have you ever picked up a real human spine? There, it's not a big heavy thing for all the weight that it's carrying. The head up at the one end, all the weight of the chest in the middle, the weight of the pelvis and upper legs at the bottom, and yet the spine itself is really quite a light thing. So we see the bones more as spacers that are pushing out against the soft tissue, and the soft tissue being both muscles and fascia as pulling in on the skeleton. And it's the balance between those two that gives you your posture. And especially for the trainers who are listening, I would say this isn't just posture, this is posture in action, or what Feldenkrais, another teacher of mine, used to call actor, posture in action. So you can recognize somebody, you can recognize a friend from two blocks down the street in New York before you can ever see their face. You can recognize them by their pattern of movement. Everybody has a signature movement as much as they have a signature iris to the eye or a signature fingerprint. And we're quite good at recognizing those patterns of movement. And that is a matter of the mind shaping the muscles. The muscles, the fascia then shaping itself around the muscles depending on the forces that are going. And even the bones will change shape, especially if the forces change. The younger you are, the more the bones are going to change shape. I'm totally silver-haired now, so my bones aren't changing shape much anymore. But a kid will change the shape of the bones. For instance, if you send a kid to dance camp, and you take a picture of your daughter's feet before she goes to dance camp and after she comes home, the bones will be thicker and shaped differently, just because she's been spending so many hours in that specialized activity. So again, your customers, clients who are doing the same activity time after time, if they're a professional athlete, are going to shape their bones and the soft tissues in particular ways. We often think about it just in terms of neurological habit. We have to understand that the tissues have a habit too. I've really gone on for a long time here. I apologize.
No, that's perfect, Tom. And just, you know, my I try to go after a general, my listenership, the audience tends to be the over the age of 35 fitness enthusiast. And, you know, I'm a fitness educator. And what I try to do is I try to put information out there for how people can maintain their favorite activities well into the later years. How'd you get started in soft tissue work? What sent you down that path?
Well, we're talking in California. I happen to be in California now, and you are. I was born on the East Coast and was raised very much up in that kind of New Englandy, don't pay attention to your body kind of upbringing. And in the early 1970s, America was tipped, and everything that was loose started rolling towards California. So I was loose, and I rolled into California. And picked up on what was called at the time the human potential movement. It's kind of called New Age or alternative medicine now, but then it had the nickname human potential movement. So I was studying Tai Chi, learning Aikido, learning meditation, doing yoga. It was all this sort of Eastern stuff that was pouring into the culture of California at that time, and I got caught up in that. And one of the people on this circuit was Ida Rolf, and the idea of being Rolfed, having your body Rolfed over, very strongly worked over, the whole thing was the general idea. And anyway, I'd heard it had good things, so I went down to see this woman, and I went down with a friend of mine, and he was one of these people. I was living in a house with him. He was a roommate at the time. He was one of these people that you looked normal when you looked at him from the front, but when you looked at him from the side, you couldn't see him because his chest was so close to his back. He was just really thin front to back. And she went to work on him, and in 45 minutes he stood up, and his chest was deeper and his voice was deeper. And I thought, that's pretty useful magic to be able to change somebody's shape like that in such a short time. And I have been fascinated with it for 45 years since. I have never stopped. I've been pretty much a workaholic doing this kind of work for years, and it doesn't substitute for training, because I can change the fascia around, but that's not going to develop the muscles or develop neuromuscular coordination. That's a product of how you move, how often you move, when you move, that, and what kind of movement you do. But I can reach into the body in places where yoga doesn't reach, training doesn't reach, or where the person themselves simply hasn't reached, or fourth category, the places where they've been traumatized and kind of seized up the body, whether that's surgery, broken bones, athletic injuries, any of those things produce scar tissue. And essentially my job is to go in, find that scar tissue and comb it out.
Well, I was going to say that I think is, people don't realize how you're saying it's structural. We're not built as a specific structure. But I think a lot of people don't realize the difference between muscle and the soft tissues, the fascia and connective tissue. What would you like, if you could just, you know, wave a magic wand, Tom, and get the general public to understand more about fascia? You've written about it in your books, and I know you speak about it on various lecture circuits. But if you could just impart the information about fascia and soft tissue, what would you like to share? What information do you think people should know about that part of their body?
It's pretty much been a Cinderella of the body tissues, in that it's been there all the time, but nobody recognized it for what it is. It's the packing material that you throw away. And it turns out to be a very dynamic system. We have studied it as individual muscles. We do individual ligaments or iliotibial tract or the central tendon of the diaphragm. We isolate out individual soft tissue structures. But if you imagine how you're held together, you're actually 70 trillion, we don't even know how many, but on the order of 70 trillion cells acting as Pete McCall. You know, you get up every morning as Pete McCall, but actually 70 trillion cells have been living that entire 24 hours, and having to have food delivered to them, have their garbage taken away, and to be able to do their job, which they do more or less well, depending on the conditions in which they're doing it. And we've thought a lot about, the fitness industry has thought a lot about, the juicy conditions that those cells are in terms of your nutrition and your hydration and perfusion and circulation, getting everything around. But those cells are also handling a mechanical environment. We tend to think of ourselves as a machine where the muscles and bones are acting as units, but the muscles are made up of cells, the bones are made by cells, and the soft tissue that surrounds it doesn't just surround the muscles and bones, it goes through your liver and around your liver, it goes through your kidney and around your kidney, it goes through your heart and around your heart. There's like two, everything is double bagged in the body. Your brain is double bagged, your heart is double bagged, your lungs are double bagged, your intestines are double bagged. And those bags are made out of fascia. Every nerve that goes, your sciatic nerve, as it goes down through your leg, if you take out the sciatic nerve and look at it, it's 65% fascia within the nerve, and then it's surrounded by 1, 2, 3 layers of fascia around each nerve bundle. So when you feel the sciatic nerve, you're mostly feeling fascia. Yes, it's a nerve. We call it a nerve, but it's about 35% nerve. It's about 2/3 fascia and 1/3 nerve, because the nerves are so delicate that they need all that fascia to protect them, number one. And number two, they need the fat, which is another soft tissue, a very important soft tissue, to hold them apart like insulation for the wires. So the fascia is surrounding and going through everything. By fascia, I mean the soft tissues are surrounding and going through everything. So it's a system that we haven't thought about, because it's so pervasive that it's kind of an environment that we missed.
And that's one thing that I think is fascinating about your work, is you're really explaining the body in a much greater detail that I think most people just fail to view. And I know your expertise is as a therapist and not as an exercise person, But what types of movements, what types of exercises should people be doing for the fascia? Because it's different than just regular traditional exercises to strengthen the muscle, correct?
Yes. Every exercise that you do to strengthen the muscle also strengthens the fascia. We know a few things about the fascia that don't apply to muscle that are really important. One is its viscosity. It's a gel. It's a little bit like that stuff that you see on the internet where guys run across a pool but and stay on top of it. But if they stand in the middle of the pool, they sink into it. It's a, like a mixture of cornstarch and water. And your body is colloidal like that cornstarch and water or like silly putty or slime. So that when you whack, if you just right now take your hands and clap them together, it doesn't hurt your fingers, even though your bones are really just under your skin. The reason it doesn't, if you press your hands together now like you're praying, but just keep pressing your hands together, pushing your elbows together, and rub your hands up and down a little bit, you'll feel the bones. They're right there. How come we don't crack up our bones when we do impact sports, landing from a high jump or catching a fastball? How come things don't break apart? Because the soft tissue is viscous and it spreads everything. We tend to think of the fascia as just being fiber, but it's also a gel. And that the viscosity of that gel is very important to protect our bodies. And unfortunately, we're just beginning to study that gel. There's hyaluronan, mucopolysaccharides, fibronectin, lots and lots of long words for how this stuff handles impact. So we're going to learn a lot about how joints work by learning how this gel works. Then we have the fibers. Now we know this. Okay, number first was the viscosity. Number two is elasticity. We know muscle is elastic, but we now know fascia is elastic too, and that you, when you're bouncing along, when you're doing cyclic movements of, well, I'm not going to go into all the restrictions, but when you're doing cyclic movements like walking and running, bouncing, jumping rope of any kind, you're building the elasticity in the fascia and the body. And if you think about it, elasticity is a product of youth, isn't it? It's an attribute of youth. If grandma falls downstairs, it may be very different if Johnny, who's 2 years old, falls downstairs. Because of the elasticity of the body, Johnny might cry, but he won't be hurt. And grandma may not cry, but she may well be really hurt. So at age 55, I started saying, okay, if I read the research that said you can train elasticity into your fascia. So I said, okay, if it's an attribute of youth and I can train it into my fascia, that's when I started 4 foot running. I'm not suggesting 4 foot running for anybody else. It worked for me. I just bounce around the blocks around my house 5 times a week or so to keep myself elastic. And it's really, I'm 70 now and I'm very happily still bouncing along. So maintaining the elasticity of your fascia is very important. And third, the plasticity. Do you want me to keep going?
If you stop at plasticity, I think that'd be perfect. I think, you know, people can follow, most listeners can be able to follow that.
Yeah. So if you, grab a carrier bag, any piece of plastic, and you stretch it out, you can usually put a stretch in a shopping bag or anything like that. And if you let it go, the stretch will still be there. If you do it too fast, it's going to tear. If you don't do it enough, it's just going to stay where it is. But if you give just the right kind of pull on something, this is what the yoga folks were thinking about with the long stretches, was to give the chance for the fascia to retain some glide in amongst the various structures. And it's too long to go through all the different kinds of fascia inside a muscle. There's fascia right around each muscle cell, the paramecium, endomecium, and then there's kind of gliding fascia within the muscle. It's like a lube layer within the muscle. And then there's the fiber outside the muscle, the epimysium, which is what we all think of as, you know, we all know the muscles are come in their own saran wrap coating. But anyway, to go through all that would be in detail would be too much. But all of that stuff together is elastic. And if you train elasticity, like the Kenyan runners who have very long shanks, were able to store and use the elasticity in their tendons like a kangaroo to conserve energy for and win the marathons. So using that elasticity and plasticity in the fascia is a really good thing. Trying to move the fascia too fast is what tears it, and that is the source of almost all the injuries.
Well, and let me ask, because any movement, I think any high quality mover, whether that's a runner or a dancer or an athlete, you know, moving, you know, in multiple directions, you know, maybe a martial artist might be a better example, but any high quality mover, isn't it just a matter of storing and releasing mechanical energy through the fascia?
Yes. For instance, if you jump up for a basketball hoop and you want to bounce up there again to get the rebound, you hit the ground with muscles that are in isometric contraction. You store the elasticity in the fascia, and then it's a very slight concentric contraction that gets you up in the air again. You're mostly just bouncing off an elastic band. If, on the other hand, to get the rebound you needed to stay on the ground, you would actually eccentrically let go of your muscle at the very moment of landing to stop yourself from bouncing, right? The natural thing as a rubber ball would be to bounce, but you can dampen that by how you use your muscles at the moment that you land to not have that bounce happen, to absorb the elastic energy. So it's not just fascia. Muscles and fascia are bouncing that energy back and forth on a second-by-second basis all over your body to give you the stability and mobility that you need at the moment that you need it.
Now, and Robert Schleif has written about this in some of his work. He suggested that through the various movements, and you've written about this too, with the multidirectional movement patterns and vectors, is it possible to create a more youthful fascial architecture? If I'm, you know, in my 50s, 60s, or, you know, or above, can I work to create a more elastic tissue structure within the body?
You certainly, I feel like I'm living proof of that. And yes, it's being proven all around us. Robert, with his ideas of fascial fitness, and other people are developing programs. So you, as I say, we're just at the beginning of this. So we, people are beginning to say, oh yeah, I know about fascia. I do foam rolling. It's so much more than just whether you're doing foam rolling. It's a question of how those forces are best used in different parts of athletics. And we've been training fascia all the time. It's not like fascia is new. The fascia has been there all the time. It's just a question of whether we can do a better job if we do it consciously. One of the things, for instance, is that fascia develops more slowly than muscle. So if you want to strengthen your tendons or strengthen the elasticity in your tendons, you have to be thinking of a 6-week to 6-month program to really get that benefit to go all over your body. It's the half-life of fascia is slower than the half-life of muscle. Muscle, because there's so much blood in it, it turns over very quickly, but fascia turns over very slowly. You may have molecules in your Achilles tendon that were there when you were born. That's how stable the Achilles tendon is. But most areas of the body are turning over all the time, but fascia turns over more slowly. So, you know, the martial arts guys in the old days and the yoga guys in the old days said, you're going to have to be with us for 2 years to get the real benefit of that. And that 2 years is pretty much what the you can be sure you've turned over your fascia by the time you've been doing a program for 2 years, whether that's a program of diet or a program of exercise, that the most of the fascia has turned over in your body in 24 months.
Well, and that's, go ahead.
Yeah, so just be thinking more long term in terms of your exercise programs. And people who come in and say, oh, I want to get buff in the next 5 weeks because I'm going on vacation or I got a new girlfriend or whatever it is, those are the ones most likely to injure because they're developing the muscles faster than they're developing the tendons to support the muscles.
And that's a great point. I'm going to make a couple comments about that after that because I really want to respect your time. One of the things that, you know, in reading through your biography, Tom, I noticed that you spent some time in Europe and specifically maybe studying architecture. How has your study of that field influenced your work on the body?
There's two ways in which that's a kind of fascinating thing. One is the space around you shapes how you move. So the kind of architecture that we create shapes how we move. I really get discouraged about schools, which are often built, you know, at fairly low levels of architecture, because everybody's under budget constraints. But churches create a particular feel about them. Public squares create a certain feel to it. And they've been thinking about that kind of thing in Europe for a long time, where Los Angeles doesn't have a lot of public square type activity, although they've been bringing that back. But the cities of Europe, for instance, I was just in Moscow, they had just wonderful set of places where the public gathers, and they have a cappella groups, or it just brings out the people to come out in public and move in different ways. We in America, people run outside, usually on a track, but we drive somewhere and park in a parking lot and go somewhere to exercise. It's a really weird thing that's happened to modern people. You got your exercise in the course of life itself. Now we're training for exercise, which makes sense if you're a performer, either an artistic performer or an athletic performer. That makes a lot of sense. But our daily lives have gotten so sedentary that we have to go to a gym to move. And so we need to figure out what are the daily minimum movement requirements, because when you, in agricultural life or in paleological life, you know, the olden Neolithic days, life provided plenty of necessity for movement, but life doesn't provide much necessity for movement now.
And I think that's interesting, because I've had the opportunity to be in Moscow just there a few months ago. And I've done some work in China recently. And you're right, because people there are much more apt to go out. The social environment is much more communal. And do you think that that has an impact on overall how we move?
Yes, but there are so many factors there. I wouldn't want to pin one down. It's absolutely different to move in China or Japan. And China and Japan are as different as Sweden and Italy. You know, you if you talked in Sweden the way they talk in Italy, you just those guys. But so how we move is very much determined by our television culture, our the fact of us being in cars so much. Our children's lives are circumscribed by how much we protect them and keep them in buildings and don't let them go free outside. A lot of those social structures are definitely affecting how we move, and definitely making it necessary for the training industry to exist. We need to find out what are the minimum requirements of movement for the muscles, for the fascia, for the nervous system, because kids are getting less and less of that kind of stimulation, and healthy mind and a healthy body. They said that in 500 AD, and it's getting more and more true every year.
Well, one thing to point out to listeners, Tom, because this is one consistent thread with most of the people I interview, you know, whether it's Stuart McGill or other people, the more people know, like you have a very, I would probably say, argue that you're probably one of the top few experts in the world in your field, but the more that people know, I find the more hesitant they are to give a definitive answer. Like, and whereas sometimes with the people that have less knowledge are extremely definitive about this is what you need to be doing for exercise. Is that something that you've observed as well? Is like the more people know, the less they feel they can really give you a specific response?
Well, Pete, I'm old, so I've seen all these things come and go and come and go and come and go, and seen the development in the training industry. You know, it's most of your listeners are perhaps young, but when aerobics came onto the scene, and Jane Fonda suddenly made exercise okay for women, It wasn't before that. It's hard to remember back to those days and how attitudes to the body were. I so celebrate all this opening up of the gender stuff so that people can simply be the kind of masculine or feminine they want to be, as opposed to the roles that my mother and father and their generation were stuck into. There's a lot of freedom coming out in those kinds of terms, but there's also just a lack of connection between the body and life. We can really get stuck between our eyes and our digits and living in the milieu of TV and the internet. And it's a real thing that we have to look at, because we've never had a thing like the internet before. And so we're going to have to change our relationship to our bodies relative to having an electronic culture as opposed to an industrial culture, which slowed us down more from having an agricultural culture, which slowed us down more from having a Paleolithic culture. You can just see it if you watch the march of history, that we're moving less and less as we get more and more convenient.
And I think people are starting to observe that. And you know, the final two questions here. One is this trend towards, what do they call the obstacle course racing, or the America, whether Ninja Warrior. I think it started in Japan and it's matriculated over here. But the whole idea of these exercises where people climb, jump, they crawl, how does that affect the body? Is that kind of a smarter way to approach movement? Is that more how we're naturally designed to move?
I think so. That's one of the, I mean, it's a new fad, so let's see where it goes. These things all start as fads. Somebody sent me a TRX thing and I hung it up over in my room and I started using it as a standard piece of equipment, just, you know, using my body weight to determine my pull-ups or push-ups or whatever. And then I just started experimenting with it. And now I take it along with me to hotels because it's the lightest thing to put in my suitcase besides a jump rope, and hang it over the hotel door and play stretches on it. I use it as a gym. You were talking about Robert Schleip a while before. Just so many great people working in this field, and Robert's one of them. And so just by holding on to the handles and working my body in a stretch, I'll put in a plug here for my Anatomy Trains line. You know, you lean sideways and you get that whole lateral line and you start paying attention to it. Okay, where am I moving in my spine and where am I not moving in my spine? And using that kind of movement to expand the amount of my body I use in any given movement, rather than just, is my body strong enough to do this movement, but is my 12th and 11th rib part of this? Am I killing my kidneys by doing this backbend? Am I just paying attention inside? Again, a lot of injuries happen when people are not paying attention to what they're feeling. They override their body, do too much, and they end up with overuse injuries. And in my experience, overuse injuries are among the hardest to fix.
And with that, and I apologize because we kind of jumped in the conversation, and I'll do an introduction before we do the full conversation. But you're known for the Anatomy Trains. You're known for that line of thought. You identified 12 specific lines to the body of how the fascia connects. What got you started down that path? What was kind of the light bulb, Tom, of where you started seeing that connection and you started kind of traveling down this journey?
I had met that woman who changed my roommate's chest, and that was Ida Roth, and I just put myself in her way for the rest of her life. I was a trouble to her, but it was a very short time, I have to say, because she died 5 years later, and some of that time I was just getting my training done, getting my anatomy and physiology and getting a massage license. But I have really been dedicated to her work since. I've studied with a lot of other people, but it was when I was working in her institute that she was talking about the fascia and how the fascia connected up the whole body, but every anatomy book just tells you the biceps goes from the coracoid process down to your radius, and it's an elbow flexor and maybe a supinator, but if you follow the fascia north and south from there, you come up with these meridians, as I call them, that starts on the inside of the thumb, comes down through those muscles at the base of the thumb, across your wrist and up that bone, and then into the biceps, up to the coracoid process. And if you keep going, you get on pectoralis minor under the major there, which has a fascial connection down onto the third, fourth, and fifth rib. So it's not that there isn't a biceps. It's just that the biceps is all part of something, and that what I was cataloging was those longitudinal somethings that go from head to toe, or from, you know, the beginning of the arm out to the end of the arm. And I found 12 of them. I'm sure somebody will find some others, or there'll be some of mine that will be changed when the real research is done. But it's just a map. It's a map to help people see those patterns. There's a line up the front of the body, which if you can think about it, it has a lot to do with people being scared and flinching because it's your soft underbelly. So if people have that kind of pattern, if they're doing training on top of that kind of pattern, it's better if they do the training to open the front, let that out, and then they're not building muscles into a pattern. What we want to do is open up the pattern and then build a muscle on top of that, in my opinion. That would be what I would hope for trainers in the future. We'll see.
And just for listeners, this is for me, this is, I'm kind of fanboying out right now, Tom, because I picked up your first edition in 2007, I believe. And like I said, I saw you speak in 2008, and I did your Anatomy Live workshop in 2013 with a good friend of mine, Michelle Dalcourt. And for listeners, I would have been more than thrilled to watch you go through the dissection, but I was completely overwhelmed when we walked in there. You handed us the scalpel and the forceps and said, all right, you guys get to experience and do the dissection yourself. And it really has changed my perspective on the body. So if anybody really wants to understand anatomy, Tom, I'd really recommend picking up anatomy trains. Do you have workshops available that people, and I know primarily they're for professionals in the field, but how can people learn more about this concept? And I know you have a couple articles out there, but where's the best resource for people that this kind of piques their interest and they want to kind of dig into this a little bit more?
Well, I'll take this opportunity to say anatomytrains.com. We have also .uk and .au. I have offices in Europe and Australia, but the anatomytrains.com is where we keep putting out new research and new ideas and new videos and stuff for people who want to tune in on it. The dissection thing, though, Pete, is just as you say. I've been very grateful to Michelle for bringing a lot of people from the training industry to these dissections that we now do in Boulder. And there is nothing like seeing for yourself. The word autopsy means see for yourself. And we get all our learning from books, we get our learning from slides and people's presentations, and to actually go look at the body itself is an amazing education in what's really going on, as opposed to anatomy as it's presented in the book, which is an idea about what's going on. And we've been in industrial society for so long that we think of the body as a machine, and no part of the body has been more turned into a machine than the muscles and the joints. It's all about levers and vectors. And as we move into thinking about more of the internet, thinking of the body as an idea or a meme or something like that, we're going to have different ways of exercising it that are going to occur to us. That don't occur to us if we're only thinking of the leverage idea of muscles. We've come a long way with the leverage of idea of muscles. It's been a good thing, and we've stopped a lot of injuries and gotten ourselves to break records left and right. But I really do believe that the idea of the body is going to change away from a machine and more towards a process. And I don't know what that's going to be. We're just at the beginning of looking at the body in a new way.
Well, I want to thank you. I want to thank you very much for your time. I really, really appreciate it. And for listeners, I highly recommend you can find his books, anatomytrains.com. I'll put a couple links to those below. But if you really want to understand how your body moves, I urge you to pick up a copy of Tom's book, because really, Tom, it's changed my life. And I've had surgeries due to sports. And in my 40s now, I can move pain-free. In fact, the most pain I have is after a 12-hour flight, you know, but if I move throughout the day, it's you know, it feels, it's easy and carefree. And I attribute a lot of that to the information I've learned from studying your work over the years. So I really greatly appreciate what you do, and I really appreciate your time today.
Great. Thanks very much, Pete. And thanks to your listeners. Keep learning.
Yeah, that was an amazing conversation. Again, if you want to learn more about anatomy, if you want to learn more about your muscles, how they function, how they're designed to function, you can either pick up a copy of Anatomy Trains, 4th edition. You can pick up a copy of my ebook, Dynamic Anatomy. Both those are down below in the show notes, but they're just there for your resources. This really was, to me, a fascinating conversation. And to let you know, Unfortunately, for the next couple weeks or going forward about the next 2 months, I do have some new interviews I will be releasing. I've been recording interviews. I've been doing my podcast thing. However, I'm getting ready to start a full-time job working for a health club company. My focus is in fitness education. For the last number of years, I've been a freelancer. I've been a consultant. I've been working with certification groups, the American Council on Exercise and the National Academy of Sports Medicine. ACE and NASM are the two largest certification organizations. I've been very fortunate to be working with both of them as a consultant and a freelancer. I've been working with fitness equipment companies. And now I'm going back in-house. I'm going to work for a health club company called EOS. EOS has locations in Florida, Arizona, Utah, Nevada, Southern California, and then there are a couple other areas where they're going to be expanding to in the next year or two. And my job for EOS as a director of education is I'm going to be working with the trainers, the fitness professionals, to help upskill them so they can deliver a higher level of service. So if you're a member of EOS, I'm really looking forward to being on the team, to working with people, to make it a really dynamic – it already is. It already is a dynamic health club company. I'm just looking forward to coming onto the team and contributing what I can to take your experience as a member, if you happen to be a member, to the next level. Now, that said, my priority for the time being for the next quarter, in the first quarter of 2022, is going to be on learning the job. I will be doing the podcast, but it's not my highest priority. So for the next couple months, you might hear a couple reruns. Hey, no worries. As I get into the schedule, as I get into my schedule with the new company, trust me, I will be putting out killer content, because my goal for 2022, as it is has been for the last few years I've been doing the podcast, is to keep All About Fitness going so I can help you learn how to use health and exercise to enhance your quality of life. You can reach out to me, Pete, at PeteMcCallFitness.com. Go to my website, PeteMcCallFitness.com. Sign up for my email list. I did an email recently for the first time in a while and got some feedback. I did a survey. The feedback I got was to try to release 2 emails a month. I'm really going to try to do that. The cool thing is going into a job means less freelance work, a little bit more consistent pay schedule, so I can be a little bit more consistent about some of these things I enjoy doing. Don't always need to pick up the freelance gigs when they come my way. Go to PeteMcCallFitness.com, sign up for my email list. I'll keep you informed about what you need to know about how to use exercise to enhance your quality of life. You can go to All About Fitness Podcast on either YouTube or Instagram. That's All About Fitness Podcast on YouTube or Instagram. And hey, as always, thank you for stopping by. And I do look forward to having you join me for future episodes of All About Fitness.